I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about art therapy. We'll discuss what it is and what benefits accrue from it. My guests are Nanette George, activity therapist for Eskenazi Health Midtown Community Mental Health, Cassie Dobbs, an art therapist at Riley Hospital for Children at IU Health, and Amy Granger, graduate research assistant in Heron's Art Therapy Program. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits at WFYI.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about art therapy. We're going to talk about what it is and how it helps people. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits at WFYI.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Nanette George. She is activity therapist at Eskenazi Health Midtown Community Mental Health. As I've said, that's going to be a mouthful, Nanette, to get in and out of the breaks with. Cassie Dobbs, who's an art therapist at Riley Hospital for Children at IU Health. And Amy Granger, a graduate research assistant in Heron's Art Therapy Program and also a practicing art therapist. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here, particularly on this beautiful day when I'm sure we would all love to be having this conversation outside. It is nice to be looking out the window, though, and seeing sun for once. So I'm going to start, Nanette, with you. Can we talk a little bit about what art therapy is?
Okay. You know, art therapy can be used in lots of ways, I think, for a healing process for folks. One of the ways that we use this is for self-expression. I work for Midtown Community Mental Health Center, and through our program, we are able to utilize art to help people that deal with mental health issues kind of empower themselves to be more expressive and open, to be able to increase their level of independence and communication with others.
So, well, and in terms of that, who are the people that art therapy, and I'll throw this one to Cassie, who are the people that most benefit from art therapy? Who are the folks who are most likely to be receptive to it?
So we like to say that anyone can be receptive to art therapy, anybody who is seeking any kind of mental health support. It's important to note that art therapists are master-level mental health clinicians and do complete an entire master's program with internship, supervision hours, and then, you know, continue on with licensure in the state. So anyone that would, you know, benefit from a typical counseling or therapy session can benefit from an art therapy session as an alternative.
Are there people, though, that it particularly benefits?
Particularly, it could benefit someone who is drawn to being creative or has a history of expressing themselves through different kind of creative means. Sometimes it's been more beneficial for someone who's like nonverbal or doesn't particularly express themselves well through verbal communication. Art can be a very nonverbal form to express yourself in a way to do therapy in a, you know, a different way.
And I'll throw this one actually to Amy. What benefits come from art therapy that you wouldn't get from other forms of therapy?
Well, I think one of the really powerful things about art therapy and creative expression in general is its ability to circumvent our social filter. And so while we all sort of have this filter that we can sort of put up with our verbal language, oftentimes engaging in the art process allows us to let some things come out that we may not be able to support or communicate otherwise. And so kind of springboarding off what Cassie was saying about art's ability to help with those that might have communication challenges, mm-hmm. individuals that may not have communication challenges, but perhaps are very guarded in their language, as so many of us are, with just being able to sort of circumvent that process and let things come out through the art process.
What sort of things, you know, I think I know what you're talking about here, but for the benefit of the audience, what sorts of things, would people be reluctant to talk about that might come out through artistic expression?
I think that, you know, certain challenges that we all have in our day-to-day lives and, you know, particularly those that are struggling with mental illness, it really provides some sort of reflective distance and being able to sort of take what's inside and put it out in a creative expression, in a visual form. And so people can kind of be able to take and see, you know, sort of this piece of what is happening in their heads and their hearts and see it in front of them. And it sort of provides this tangible visual form that they can then reflect on. And a lot of times I see in working with my adult clients this level of insight gained, not only through the product that they see before them, but the process as well. What's happening when they perhaps say, I don't like the way this material feels, I want to go to this material. What might that be about? And that provides, you know, some insight into how they process in the art and then how that can translate into how they process in their day-to-day life as well.
Cassie, is picking up on that point, you know, one of the cliches, I suppose, about this is that, you know, by working through things artistically, it's possible to approach issues that may be too painful in a little more indirect or oblique manner so that some of the pain is minimized. Is that, you know, an accurate characterization of what art therapy can do, or is that a gross oversimplification?
I don't think it's about minimizing pain. I think it's just about approaching it in a different form or way. Sometimes it can be really difficult to verbally state those things that are painful. So it's giving them another alternative on how to, you know, approach something that is painful. So for example, one of my roles actually at Riley, besides working with children inpatient, two evenings a week, I work at our bereavement program for grief and loss, which is called Hope and Healing, and it's Riley's program. And so, for example, I work with parents there who have lost children. Mm-hmm. And so an example of an art directive I might use, it's definitely kind of facing the pain, but it's doing it in a different way. So we're doing it not like without words or and with words, but so we take a terracotta pot and we break it into pieces, and then I invite them to make something with it after. It's a very unique material to work with, and the breaking of the loss is very symbolic of, or breaking of the pot is very symbolic of their loss. Mm-hmm. And then rebuilding the pieces after is very symbolic of what they are doing with all these pieces now after this loss. So maybe they try and rebuild it exactly how it was, but the pot can't be rebuilt how it was before, showing that life has forever changed with this, mm-hmm. you know, loss in their life. That's an example of we're facing the pain. We're just doing it in a way that is using metaphor and using our hands and different materials and looking at it in a different way.
How did you arrive at the idea of using something terracotta?
We learned to use a lot of materials when we were in school. And mm-hmm. as an artist before I became an art therapist, I had used a lot of different material. We're really thought to think outside the box and how materials can really affect mm-hmm. a therapy session.
Well, and I guess what the reason is because, you know, if you use just an ordinary vase or a piece mm-hmm. of pottery, there is a possibility that it could be glued back together again, but that doesn't seem to be part the point of the exercise that you're working through here.
Exactly.
So, you know, was it an idea to use terracotta simply because it can't be put back together the way it was, at least without a phenomenal run of luck.
Yeah. They would need a lot of time. It does kind of crumble. It's also readily available. There's many things that go into our supplies, you know, to think of what we can provide plenty of, what's not going to harm or hurt somebody. So we're careful with gloves and towels. We don't want to put shards of glass on the table and encourage them to break it. So we have to consider lots of different things. But terracotta is hard to put back together where some other things might not. So, yeah, we are always considering how to kind of get that that session across.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about art therapy here on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, Nanette, at what point did art start to become therapy or become recognized as a therapeutic force?
Well, I think it's kind of been around for quite some time. You know, over the years, over the ages. But again, art is just a modality where, you know, people can access that pretty easily. You don't necessarily have to have a lot of material.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of go with the basics of what you have. And it really just emphasizes that piece of helping people to recover from physical illness, recover from mental health issues.
Yeah, I guess where I was going with that question is, you know, even the idea that we recognize that the idea of mental health or mental illness mm-hmm. is a relatively recent phenomenon in human history, mm-hmm. that, you know, many of the things we now consider mental illness a century ago or a little before that simply would have been considered character defects or, you know, and right. would have gone undiagnosed and the people mm-hmm. with them would have mm-hmm. continued mm-hmm. to suffer. So this has been a progression. At what point did the medical profession and the mental health profession begin to realize, oh, art gives us an avenue to deal with some of these problems? Amy, your thoughts, please.
So the art therapy profession really emerged in the 1940s, and it was really sort of the founders of art therapy were really sort of on two ends of the spectrum in working with art as sort of more art as therapy versus art psychotherapy. And so, you know, as Nanette was saying, you know, art has been around since the beginning of time. We can identify cave paintings and mm-hmm. see, you know, how art has progressed in the years of our human existence. But it wasn't until the 1940s when we really started to see how helpful art was in a medical and a psychiatric setting. And so that kind of emerged out of these two women, Margaret Naumburg and Florence, or Margaret Naumburg and then I just blanked.
It'll come to you at another point. Yeah, at 3 o'clock in the morning, most likely, you'll bolt upright and say, "Oh yeah."
So and they Edith Kramer. I'm sorry, that was her name. And they were really looking at art and sort of for the inherent therapeutic value, and then also in the, like I said, the psychiatric setting. And so, you know, we think about, okay, it's been around for 70 years, but we still call ourselves like a relatively new profession mm-hmm. because of, one, we haven't been around as long as some of our sister professions mm-hmm. that began, you know, decades earlier, and also just the realization and the recognition in the past several years of the true impact. And so we always kind of think of ourselves as this, you know, emerging or pioneering field. And in my program, we were really kind of taught how to be pioneers in our field. And I think especially in a state like Indiana, where it's not always as well established and always as recognized and contrast to perhaps some other states where it's more established, mm-hmm. We were really kind of taught on how to, you know, pioneer and sort of advocate for our profession.
Where did the resistance? I mean, to me, this strikes me as almost intuitive that mm-hmm. there are some things. You know, I mean, we know, from learning styles and all of that, there's some people who are visual communicators, there's some people who process, so it stands to reason that most of us would have different ways of coping with pain and having to come to terms with it and dealing with it. But I know the medical profession can be very conservative. Some of that is inherent. You know, they start with first do no harm. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, I think what's going on here is, correct me if I'm wrong, but I am about to introduce a much larger subject here than we can deal with in the next 20 seconds, mm-hmm. which is about what we've got. So I think what we will do is I've sort of set the table here, and we will pick this up when we get to the other side of the break. If you are just joining us, we are talking about art therapy. We're talking about what it is and the benefits that accrue from it. We're about to start talking about really how it came to be a force in therapy. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. My guests are Nanette George, she's with Eskenazi Health Midtown Community Mental Health, Cassie Dobbs at Riley Hospital for Children at IU Health, and Amy Granger, who is a graduate research assistant at Heron's Art Therapy Program. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today on No Limits about art therapy. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Nanette George. She's activity therapist for Eskenazi Health Midtown Community Mental Health, Cassie Dobbs, she's an art therapist at Riley Hospital for Children at IU Health, and Amy Granger, graduate research assistant in Heron's Art Therapy Program and a practicing art therapist. So before we went to the break, I started to introduce this subject really of what the resistance might have been to art therapy as a form of therapy. Some of it, I realize, the medical profession can be and should be conservative and not chase after, very speculative cures. But there seems at times that the conservative approach can go far beyond that. It can be just a resistance to innovation or resistance to change. So I want to talk a little bit, and I'll start with Cassie on this, about where the objections or the concerns might have come from.
Yeah, so I think you kind of mentioned at first, like, change, you know, bringing in a new kind of approach to mental health in general. You know, change in using techniques and something that haven't been used before is probably the initial resistance. I think if there's any resistance nowadays, it's kind of back to that, like, educational standpoint, like, should art therapists have masters and be part of the mental health profession? And also that we're still really small. While it's becoming we build on more art therapists in the nation every year, we're still a relatively small population. So even just getting the word out that we exist and that what our credentials are, what our training is, and what we're capable of doing, is just that's where the advocate piece comes in the most, is just the education, educating other people on what we do and what we can provide.
Nanette, where did you see the objections coming from or concerns?
I think sometimes people look at art in terms of treatment that's just not there. That's just not something that could work. They see it as, oh, that's just having fun, just being able to play. But again, working in a mental health population, I see a different view to that completely. Our programs have grown because of the use of art in terms of dealing with severe and chronic mental illness for our clientele. So I don't know, maybe the ladies could talk to that.
Well, more. Amy, I'm going to give, because it is a large subject, I wanted to give everybody a crack at it.
You know, I think one of the big pieces of resistance that we see, especially in our adult population, has a lot to do with our culture. If you think about how we are sort of engaged and immersed in arts, a lot of that stops in childhood. You know, when you think about what is our experience with art as adults, a lot of clients come to me and say, I haven't done this since I was in fifth grade, since I was 6 years old. And so I hear a lot of that. And so I think that there's a lot of initial resistance because of their familiarity, you know, in this idea of that's something children do. And so, you know, one of the things that we're trained in as art therapists is material, having a lot of knowledge about materials and making sure that we provide materials that are appropriate for the age level to sort of try and decrease some of that resistance, you know, buying professional art materials if budget allows, really trying to engage people that way to sort of get them to see that it's not just about, you know, having fun or you know, just playing with the material. Sometimes that's important. Sometimes that's very important and therapeutic to be able to play with the materials. But sort of getting over that hurdle of resistance, that I think that that's a big piece that ties into that.
Cassie, you mentioned that it's still a very small profession. How small are we talking about?
I can't recall like the exact numbers in the nation, but as far as Indiana, our best guess is how many we have, around 40 to 50 in the entire state. So when you compare that to other professions, it's fairly small. So I'm also the president of the Indiana Art Therapy Association, and we're really working on some more organization in the state to allow, you know, opportunities for more art therapists in the state to really encourage the growth of our field. In addition to, we have, you know, 3 graduate programs in the state of Indiana now, which is wonderful. So we'll have a lot more graduates and students coming into the field and really being advocates for the field. So it's growing, I think, at a really steady pace, and it's becoming more recognized, but it's just going to take some time.
How does one prepare to become an art therapist?
So you do have to, in this, you know, in the whole nation, a standard for art therapy is a master's degree. So it's a master's degree in art therapy. We also are mental health counselors. So majority of programs offer that dual program where you kind of get your master's in mental health and specialization in using art materials. But that's also a growth in itself, as we do not have title protection in the state. So just because you get a master's in art therapy doesn't mean you're the only people who can call yourselves art therapist.
Oh, okay. So is there any protection at all I've got a master's degree, but it's not in therapy or in art therapy or of any kind, from me walking out and saying I'm an art therapist?
At the time, legally with the state, no. There are ethical, questions there as far as, you know, trying to protect the population. So it's something we're working toward in the state. So, you know, that with a separate licensure could be an option. Right now we are eligible for a license of mental health counselors in the state. So there's a lot of things we're playing around with to kind of protect the profession of art therapy and mostly protect the population.
And the reason I'm pursuing this to a degree is, if there is someone who, you know, who is looking to do art therapy, got to presume it's someone who is in some pain at that point. And presumably we all would like to keep them from being further victimized. Is one of the ways that they can check then to make sure that they would be working with someone who is trained as an art therapist, is to look and make sure that he or she is a licensed mental health professional? Or I see Nanette shaking her head, but I'll give Cassie the first crack and then let Nanette come in.
So as far as calling yourself an art therapist, it would be the first thing you want to check is the master's degree in art therapy, because not all art therapists are licensed right out of school. But it's important to note that art therapists do not limit art being used therapeutically with other kinds of professions. It's just a different training. So as far as Nanette, she's an activity therapist, and activity therapists are well known to use art making therapeutically in their sessions. The difference is that master's in mental health, where you're going to be able to, I can provide a therapy session with no art whatsoever, and I'm eligible for license in the state. But I just want to note there are lots of professions out there that can use art supplies and art materials for different kinds of interventions.
Nanette, I'll give you a chance. Yes, okay.
And yes. That is the point.
Okay, we are talking about art therapy here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Marie has done and find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Marie writes, St. Mary of the Woods College has our Master's of Arts in Art Therapy program for art therapists across the nation and world. Such an important field. Is that one of the three programs you were referencing, Cassie?
Yes, it's actually our only accredited program in the state currently. The other two programs are fairly new, so St. Mary has been around for quite some time.
What sort of things, Amy, do you study in those programs?
Well, the program at Heron School of Art and Design, it's a 60-credit-hour program, which includes 1,000 hours of clinical internship and supervision as well. So we are supervised on-site with either a psychologist, a licensed mental health counselor, a licensed clinical social worker, or an art therapist if we are able to be placed in the internship with an art therapist. And then we are also supervised by faculty at Heron. The kinds of classes that that are taken at Heron include everything from lifespan development, psychological theories in both counseling and art therapy. We provide classes in ethics, in child and adolescent development, art therapy with families and adults, specialized populations where we might break out into more specific therapy with specific populations or in specific settings. We also take classes. We are partnered with the School of Education to take classes in things like group therapy. So we may be with other counselors, school counselors, and psychopharmacology. So we can, learn about different medications that our clients may be on. That's a small snippet of some of the kind of courses that we take.
So, Nanette, in working, when you see people working through some of their issues using art, mm-hmm. what benefits do you see? What are the signs that you look for to see if it is working or is helping them?
A lot of times they kind of like what Amy and Cassie were talking about with choosing a different medium of art to work with. It really helps empower them to feel like they're competent at doing something where before they might have been challenged with that. Or, if they're depressed, you see pretty clearly they brighten as they start to engage in some artwork. I know throughout the years, I think that's the thing that has attracted me mostly to working with our population in terms of how traditional therapies are awesome mm-hmm. for them and much needed at times. But as well, when they get involved in the art, and I know Amy had talked about too before where initially, our clients may come in, and when you introduce some sort of art, they'll think it's child's play, and they're not very comfortable with that. I ask them to give it a try. One of the programs that I work with is we have a clay program. And so initially, they're very curious about, well, what can I do with that? And just to be able to see them create something, they're absolutely amazed. And this helps to just kind of empower them to feel better about who they are, despite some of their challenges with mental illness, mental health symptoms.
We are talking about art therapy here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Anita has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Anita, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I just have a comment that the ladies have been very kind and have stayed away from this standpoint, but other professions are protectionist. And so, and not just the medical profession. I'm a social worker, but what I really truly believe is that art therapy is a wonderful way for all ages, from children to older adults, to be able to address their mental health issues. And, you know, if anything, hopefully there's plenty of room for everyone, and hopefully the Heron program and the other programs in the state will expand and quickly. That's all I had to say.
Thanks very much for the call and for the comment, Anita. Amy, you're
Thank
smiling.
You. Oh, I in listening to what you had to say, Anita, I absolutely agree with, you know, integrating art into other forms of therapy. You know, we kind of talk about in our program, we don't own art.
Mm-hmm.
And art can be therapeutic, and art creation, the creative process, is helpful and beneficial for everyone. And so there, I think that there is a little bit of this sort of protection and territory or territorial nature that we can sometimes get as art therapists. And it's really, you know, it's a common and it's, I think, a lifelong journey for us to sort of be able to find how we can all fit together and collaborate with our sister professions and being able to expose people to art making.
Is it difficult to work with some of those sister professions now? I mean, Anita was making reference that she does social work, and, you know, that I could be wrong, Anita, and if I am, please correct me, call back and correct me. But I thought that there was an insinuation there that the protectionist is more territorial. You know, we do this, and that there would be benefit from collaboration across those professional lines. Is it hard to achieve that kind of collaboration? I see Amy nodding her head and Cassie leaning in. Both of these are signals that you want to say something. So I'll start with Cassie to give Amy
a chance
after that.
I think there's like two pieces. I think first, it's important to note that we do collaborate very frequently with all kinds of different professions, whether it's social work, music therapy, any other kind of therapist. I know I go to, roundings every week with all different kinds of professionals, and we really have to work together to provide support. The other piece is if you look at art and art therapy on a spectrum, so you have on one side of the spectrum art as therapy, so we know art is therapeutic. So down here you have this, then you have this other side where you have the psychotherapy and the art, kind of like how it started. So the important thing to note is that the important part of art therapists is that our focus is building those relationships with those patients and having an art therapist present in art therapy. So art is, and we know art can be used in all kinds of ways. It's not just for art therapists, but we are trained for 2 years plus in a master's degree in how to use it pretty in-depthly. So it's just, there's just differences.
Mm-hmm. Amy.
I think another piece of our training includes material usage. In coming into a master's level program, there are undergraduate prerequisites. And so you have to have a certain number of fine arts studio courses to be able to enter into a master's level program. And something that building on that foundational piece is not only having a sort of education around all of these different materials that are available, everything from drawing and painting, traditional types of art materials, to like what Cassie was saying with like terracotta pots, right? And so being able to have knowledge, which is, I think, really sort of special to an art therapy training, in sort of learning how to prescribe that, right? So when we can say that therapeutic art making, how to make art, because art is inherently therapeutic, but learning from the master's level art therapy material usage on how to prescribe different materials to work with different symptoms.
We are talking about art therapy and its benefits today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Nanette George. She is activity therapist with Eskenazi Health Midtown Community Mental Health. Cassie Dobbs, an art therapist at Riley Hospital for Children at IU Health. And Amy Granger, graduate research assistant in Heron's Art Therapy Program and a practicing art therapist. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about art therapy and how it can help people. My guests are Nanette George. She is activity therapist with Eskenazi Health Midtown Community Mental Health. Cassie Dobbs, who's an art therapist at Riley Hospital for Children at IU Health. And Amy Granger, a practicing art therapist and graduate research assistant in Heron's Art Therapy Program. If you want to join the conversation, you can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what Anita did and give us a call back at 866-476-3881. Anita, welcome back. Did I screw it up?
No. It's just that apparently I didn't clarify. I was not saying that those who are in art therapy are protectionists. I'm saying that sometimes the other professions can be. I really, truly do believe that an expansion of art therapy programs, but they are facing challenges from other professions, and I just hope the other professions will open it up. Those of us who are in social work, there's plenty of space for everybody. It doesn't just have to be social workers, or it doesn't have to be psychologists or whatever. But art therapy has a very important place in therapy. So
let me ask, with the people you work with, Anita, I'm going to keep you on the line for just a second. What benefits, because you operate from a different point on this spectrum, what benefits do you see with the people you work with? From art therapy for them?
Well, they're able to express their feelings when they can't express it in other ways. And especially with children, you can sit and talk with them and talk with them and talk with them, and you're not going to get very much information. But once they start focusing on their feelings and they're expressing it through art, those feelings come out, and they don't realize it, but it's very good indicators for the therapist then to know what direction to do intervention.
Well, thank you very much for calling back and clarifying. I will give my guest here a chance then to respond to the spirit of your remarks. Thanks very much.
Thank them, and just anything that they can do to get their programs to expand, go for it.
Well, they'll probably ask for your phone number then. All right. Thanks very much, Anita. Take care.
Uh-huh.
So, in response, we understand now it is more about the territorial boundaries. Do you run into that, Nanette? Do you find that that's a problem?
I don't necessarily run into that with our clientele, but actually, and I believe it was Anita,
yeah.
What she was talking about is how when you present...
It's not so much your clients as it is,
right.
as it is other professions who are saying, back off, this is my,
right.
my turf.
I don't see that where I am at this point, but...
Cassie?
I don't see it where I work, but I definitely see it in the field. It's hard to really narrow down, because when I work individually with people and they recognize the benefit and my credentials, we have a great relationship and it becomes a great collaboration. The problem that I run into is just the misinformation. So like getting a call from another organization that says, I can't provide therapy because I'm not a therapist, for example, that happened recently. I have to go back in and be like, well, I'm a therapist, and let me explain what I went to school, what I studied, all the hours I've obtained, you know, the tests I've taken for licensure, and so on and so forth. So I think a lot of it is just a miscommunication or uneducation, but also this kind of resistance to a whole new profession kind of coming in. Even though we've been around for quite some time, like I said, we're small, so our footprint is small. So just kind of getting the awareness out that we're here and we are providing this work, but we need more of us.
Amy, do you run into that sort of turf protection?
I wouldn't say that I've... I've heard that that's been the experience of other individuals. I don't know that I have experienced that personally. And so I really appreciate Anita calling back to talk a little bit about this protection from other professions. We are seeing that in some of the credentialing for our programs. Mm-hmm. And so, as Cassie mentioned earlier, we have three art therapy programs in the state of Indiana. St. Mary of the Woods, which has been established for quite some time. They are an accredited art therapy program. Heron School of Art, we are getting ready to go through our accreditation process. We're getting ready to graduate our fifth cohort this year. And then we have a brand new program starting at University of Indianapolis in the fall. And, you know, there's just been a lot of change in the mental health field with who can have certain licenses and certain credentials. And all that, a lot of that really comes down to insurance and billing for insurance. And that has been, you know, like Cassie has said, about title protection. Well, there's also these pieces with licenses that go for insurance billing. In the state of Indiana, you get your registration as an art therapist, which is a national credential. That's an ATR, and you can go beyond that to get your certifications, to get your ATR BC. In the state of Indiana, that you can't do much with that unless you find a grant-funded or a salaried position. You cannot bill insurance. You have to get a license like an LMHC, which is a licensed mental health counselor, or in other states there are other licenses. And so there, with sort of the shift in education, mm-hmm. There have been some of these, some of our sister professions that have sort of trying to, I guess, protect what they're trying to do to actually prevent professions like ours, where we get a dual license, mm-hmm. From pursuing that in future years.
So I want to shift the conversation a little bit back to that. We've talked a lot about the therapy and working within the medical field about this. Are there forms of art that are more beneficial for people who are in pain, you know, that create these paths to confronting what afflicts or ails us? You know, is it sounds like, you know, smashing the crockery works at some level for Cassie, and then attempting to put it back together. But, you know, is music an appropriate way or a good way for some people to deal with some forms? You know, do you do journaling or poetry or any of the other forms of art? I'll start with Nanetta, and I know, yeah. And you're sort of saying, well, yes, on all of that.
Yeah, I'm kind of nodding my head because I know. Yeah. We've expanded in terms of using clay, using creation of self-inspired greeting cards, and then an art studio with painting, collage, and drawing. We have a clinician right now that had opened up a group for expressive writings, because a lot of times... people will, they can put things into words and they feel more comfortable with that maybe than they do with sometimes with art. But what I do, they feel very comfortable with use of clay work or painting or creating something of their own. So I think I'm getting a little off topic here, but I think it can expand into lots of different things.
Cassie.
I think it's a good time to like clarify that there are several different professions working creatively. So you have art therapists, and our primary tool for working is art materials, painting, drawing, and all the fine art materials and a little beyond. But then we also have, in you know, sister programs, like you said, include music therapists, drama therapists, and movement or dance therapists. All have different kinds of you know, educational standards or credentials, but we work closely with them in the field to make sure a patient or a client is getting what they need to utilize for their best therapeutic need. So, you know, for Riley Hospital for Children at IU Health, we have 2 full-time art therapists and we have 3 full-time music therapists, and we're hopefully going to start onboarding a dance movement therapist. So it really takes a team of us to provide the best creative care, I guess, for our patients.
How do you go about, and I'm curious, because it seems to me that would be part of the diagnosis process too, where you would say, wow, this is someone who, you know, would respond best to art therapy, and maybe someone else would respond best to music therapy. What are the signs? How do you go about determining what is a good fit for which person? I'll stay with you, Cassie, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts on that.
I can give examples just from where I work. Since I work so closely, we are different programs. We work together really closely as a team. So if we, for example, get a consult for a patient that has got a consult for art and music, we go and do our assessments either individually or together or separately. So if the person has a history of using music in the past, sometimes it's just based on their interest. So do they prefer to try music therapy and art therapy? No, they can always try the other modality. So really we let, you know, by talking to the person and getting to know the person and person-centered care and kind of like a care design for them, we like to know more about them, what they think that they would most benefit from, what was more interesting, what would be encouraging for them to participate. So it's really about their needs. They know what they, you know, they're the experts in kind of themselves. So kind of determining as a team what is best for that patient.
Amy.
So as Cassie was saying, like, you know, there are different, there are even as just an art therapist, there are other creative and expressive arts therapies as well, music therapy, drama therapy, and dance and movement therapy. And that all kind of falls under the creative arts therapy umbrella. I have, in my clinical work, I have not had that experience in working with a team like that. I primarily do outpatient therapy in a group practice. Touching on what Cassie had said about assessment, that's another really important part of what we do. And actually part of our educational background as well is going through art assessment course. And so there are a lot of formalized art therapy assessments, which we can use to gather more information about a patient that, you know, oftentimes can't be seen through, you know, a checklist of symptoms. We can learn diagnostic information through an art therapy assessment. But again, it also does need to come from the patient too, from the client. What are they interested in? You know, sort of meeting them where they are with where their interests lie.
What do you look for, you know, when they're doing the therapy? You know, obviously, at least part of it, you're trained observers as therapists to see, you know, if there are other ways that you can intervene or help. What are the things you are looking for while they're doing their art, which is also doing their therapy? Amy, I'll start with you, but I'm going to take that one around the horn.
So as I said earlier, it's not always about the product. It's about the process as well. So being that trained observer, we're trained to sort of watch not only what they're creating, but how they're creating it. That's an important part of how we make those informed clinical observations.
And when you say what they're making it, how they're making it,
yes.
What do you mean by that?
The process and how they're creating. You know, are they, you know, taking, you know, if they're given a selection of material, so here's watercolors, here's chalk pastels, here's colored pencils, you know, you choose the material. Okay, what material do they choose? How are they holding it? You know, are they, you know, choosing the chalk pastels and vigorously scribbling, or are they barely touching it and making light strokes, you know, that all informs our clinical observations of what's happening with this individual. And like I said earlier, it's very much a parallel process mm-hmm. in how they create to what's happening in their day-to-day life and how they operate. And, you know, and then what they say about the art too, you know, it's not just about the picture mm-hmm. that they create or the process. It's also about, you know, how do they relate to it? What do they say? Nothing is always, there's no manual in art therapy that says, well, a circle equals this and a raccoon equals this. It's really about what do they put out?
Mm-hmm.
What might our direction of our thinking indicate? But then what do they bring back to us through their verbalizations?
Okay. Nanette, what do you look for?
I don't know that I can say anything more in depth than what Amy has talked about. I mean, she's right on point. It is about the process. You know, I look for, we offer our clientele choices within mm-hmm. programs, and just depending on what they choose. So a lot of times it's a matter of how they feel, just like she said.
Okay. You know. Cassie, how about you?
Yeah, I'll briefly touch on that. Content of the therapy session is as important as the art making. So making sure you're communicating with your client or patient at all times and getting to know them. Part of the therapy is that therapeutic relationship. So the more you work with them, the more you get to know them. You can tell a difference if they use this one day, they use it differently the other day, maybe something's going on. And as far as working, I work with a medical, you know, population. So a mm-hmm. good example might be, you know, I had a patient color something, you know, drew something, colored in the lines, this very structured drawing, and 2 days later could hardly even scribble. And that to me was an indication that something wasn't quite right with her. And I let the medical team know, and they got an MRI brain scan and realized that her tumors had grown, infecting her ability to do what she had done 2 days ago and to now. So there's all kinds of things that we can determine. I didn't ask her how she, you know, I couldn't tell verbally that something was changed in her, but I could absolutely tell that her ability to make art had changed. So that's another good example.
So these sessions have to be pretty intense because you have to observe very closely what people are doing. For the record, everyone is nodding here. So it's a radio, sadly, is not a verbal medium. Yes. Yeah. Okay. And all of that. And the intervention in this case was one of alerting medical professional. But if you're dealing with someone who's got a mental health issue, not necessarily a tumor or something like that, real quickly, what sort of intervention do you do then?
So any kind of intervention, but it would be more focused on the actual mental health that is in front of me. So whatever I got a consult for, I mostly get consults for mental health, and she is a mental health like patient. But in this case, I was able to identify, because I knew her so well and what she could do, that there was a change. But in most cases, my entire role would be to figure out how they are coping with hospitalization and with maybe a chronic illness, and how that has affected their mental health.
Well, that'll have to be the last word, even though I think we could easily do another hour on this subject. I'd like to thank my guests, Nanette George, who is with Eskenazi Health Midtown Community Mental Health, Cassie Dobbs, who's with Riley Hospital for Children at IU Health, and Amy Granger, who is with Heron's Art Therapy Program. I'd like to thank also our listeners for some great questions and for spending this time with us. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.